Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. The Rusty Penny Brewing Company in Penrith, New South Wales. Do you know much about it? No, well, me neither. But luckily for all of us, that's about to change right now. Joining me on this episode of the Beer Healer Interviews are Matt Hewitt and Mark Lyons, the co-founders of Rusty Penny, who have found their way to me via our common friend, Ben Miller, who is a regular on this podcast. These guys began their brewing adventures over a decade ago with an all-grain brew in the garage in Penrith. From there, they opened a home brew store, which eventually led to opening a brewery called the Rusty Penny. So to find out about their adventures in brewing, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Matt and Mark.
G'day, how you going?
G'day.
Now, we need to identify, so that was Matt first and Mark second.
That's right.
So that everybody knows who's talking. It'll probably get a bit confusing later on, but we'll run with it. Guys, thanks for joining me tonight in the midst of this coronavirus outbreak. It's very brave of you.
Yeah, no worries. Our pleasure.
And, of course, many thanks to the newly married Ben Miller for suggesting that I get you guys on as guests. So just wondering, how did you guys meet?
Oh, that's a really strange story, actually.
Really?
No, not too strange. We've known each other since I would have been about two, maybe three.
Oh, right.
And then our parents used to go to the same playgroup together, and we kind of just became friends through that. And Mark was always a year older than me, so. We managed to still stay friends even though we weren't in the same year for most of our school.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, we've always just been good mates, like never really had any dramas. And
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how old are you blokes?
I'm 32.
Oh, I was thinking you might be in your 40s and that maybe you might have shared the backseat of a car as toddlers with maybe a packet of crisps and a raspberry lemonade while mum and dad went to the leagues club or something like that.
No,
nothing like that. Maybe that was just me in the 80s. That's what my dad did with me when he went in and put a few bets on, but maybe times have changed. So when did you guys discover your love of handcrafted beer?
So pretty much all started for us when we were pretty much being on 18, and Mark's dad actually used to do his own home brew. And it kind of spiked my interest a little bit, and I got a bit infatuated with it, and went straight to all grain, and Mark kind of just came along for the ride, and we brewed pretty much every single batch together for would have been over 10 years of home brewing. I don't think we ever brewed a batch that we weren't both there, and so we kind of just both bounced ideas off each other and learnt from each other, and you know, learnt to bag each other out because every now and then would stuff it up and make a terrible batch. But I think that it was just a hobby that we both picked up and both enjoyed, and we obviously love drinking beer, so making beer made it a lot more economical.
Mark, what I'm hearing from Matt here is that you were basically the inspiration for all of his brewing adventures.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
That's very sweet. What kind of beers did you guys like to make together in the home brew shed?
We tried a lot of different things, but we mainly like our stout. Like we do like our dark beers, and I suppose
I'm with you.
That was the I suppose that's the hardest thing opening a brewery is brewing, not being able to just brew a whole 12 taps of dark beer.
Yeah. Yep.
Because not everyone shares our passion for that.
No, that's fair enough. Well, I was talking to the guy that ran Mason Ale Works just last week, and he had to change their whole beer lineup because they were brewing for themselves and not for the people that were drinking it.
Yep, we completely understand what's going on there.
Yeah, as owners, you don't pay for the beer effectively, so you got to do something to get some money in the till, don't you?
100%.
Yeah, there's always at least one or two beers on the board that we ourselves don't really drink. It's there for the customers.
Well, that's okay because they keep paying your rent, don't they?
That's right.
So the first all-grain brew you did back in the garage, How bad was it? Did you tip it like I did mine?
The very first one was trying to think what the first one was now.
Was it the original, like the old brown ale type recipe?
I think that the very, very first all grain brew we ever did was the Dr. Schmudo's Golden Ale.
Golden Ale, that was my second brew.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that would have been like the first, because it was kind of like, you know, we'd obviously never done all grain, and that was the one that when you logged onto Aussie Home Brewers and went to recipes, it was the one right at the top.
Top, wasn't
it? And you thought to yourself, well, if everyone likes it, you can't really muck it up that bad. And that was the very first beer we ever brewed, and it actually turned out pretty good. Well, we thought it did anyway. I would say that we have been pretty lucky, I guess. Like, we haven't really had that many batches of beer that we've made ourselves and gone, you know what, that's horrible. Which is probably how we stuck with the hobby for so long and then ended up where we are.
Hey, back on that Dr. Smurdo's Golden Ale. Yeah. Like, when I first brewed that, I was sort of just leaving, working for Lion at the time, and I always had these really fond, almost romantic memories of the first time I ever tried James Squire's Golden Ale, like the really original recipe, which was a pretty decent beer back in the day.
Yeah.
And so I was brewing Dr. Smurdo's thinking it was going to come out exactly like my memories of that beer. And, Jesus, I was completely wrong. Mine was terrible. Did you actually get to drink yours? Was it drinkable?
Yeah, ours is drinkable. And, it was a pretty good base beer for us to start with, I guess. It was a pretty simple, straightforward process. And I think we'd brewed that beer a couple of times early on. And then we quite quickly went to making up our own recipes, and we'd obviously started buying some brewing literature and went a little bit crazy with trying to learn things and try and experiment and do different things and work out how our system worked that we'd built. We then made our basic beers that are ones that were still on tap at the brewery. So the stout was probably our oldest beer that we've ever made. We brewed that probably in the first couple of batches of beer and
it
hasn't changed. It's
that's
it's
awesome.
Exactly the same recipe as we brewed it back, you know, back in what 2005, 2006.
Oh shit. So you're going along brewing these homebrew recipes together. At what stage did the penny drop and you thought to yourselves, I think we want to take this thing to the next level?
It was kind of a really strange transition for us, I guess. We got to the point where we were brewing that much beer in my garage, and obviously all of our friends were coming drinking the beer. We had keg systems at everyone's houses, and everyone's like, well, why don't you open a brewery? And then I suppose for us, the hobby got that big that we were already doing bulk buys for grain and meeting up with heaps of other home brewers and supplying everyone bulk grain. And it just kind of all fell into place, I guess. Like, we kind of went from, you know, setting up all of the logistics for getting all of our supplies on a bulk scale while we're still brewing on a 120-litre three-vessel system in a garage. And just kind of went, well, why don't we do that? It just kind of made sense.
But is that when you then went into the home brew store stage of things?
Yeah, pretty much. It was so we realized that we were spending too much money on supplies and kept upgrading our system. So we kind of started to resell.
Needed some tax write-offs.
Yeah.
and so that was literally how it started. You were buying so much stuff, you thought, we need to do this a better way. Let's start our own store.
Well, kind of. I suppose the store was kind of a stepping stone in that the goal was always to open a brewery up.
Right.
And it was obviously we enjoyed making beer, and the people around us seemed to enjoy our beer. And I think that's kind of the basics of how everybody that wants to open a brewery kind of starts. And then for us, it was that we needed a space, and there was nothing really like this in Penrith. And we needed a space to be able to do what we wanted to do. But because we were obviously cash short is probably an understatement. we needed a way in which we were going to raise some revenue to be able to buy some equipment and also to pay the rent on the space that we needed for all of our DA and license applications. And so that's Things Homebrew kind of started. And it was always meant to have a short life expectancy, and that we were meant to get in there, get it all done, get set up, and then All Things Homebrew was going to just go to bed and would be Rusty Penny Brewing. And those processes, we're kind of lucky that we had the homebrew shop, because all of those processes took us a lot longer than we'd estimated. And
but did you actually enjoy running the homebrew shop?
Oh, yeah, it was all right.
You're not convincing me, Mark.
It's I suppose the homebrew shop was good, because we got to meet a lot of like-minded people, the people that enjoyed spending time with and talking to about beer. But at the same time, a standalone homebrew store isn't really a massive revenue maker. And so it was just that constant struggle with continuing to put a lot of effort into a business that wasn't going to be profitable in the long term. And then obviously trying to continue to push forward to get our brewery sorted out. So there was so during the time that we had All Things Homebrew, it was quite, I suppose it was probably the most stressful time that we had while we're setting it up, because we're trying to run a business as well as set up a brewery. And, we're kind of glad, I suppose, now that we're where we are now, and we don't have to run through those businesses. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was your clientele like? Was it all kit and kilo guys, or was it blokes like Ben Miller?
We did a lot of all grain supplies. So we had a whole wall of spec malts. I think there was, oh, it would have been
16
to 20 different spec malts, and then and then full bags of base malts. So we used to mill it all on site, and so the guys would come in. They could pretty much make any recipe they wanted, and mix in all the grains that they wanted to, and would mill it up for them and take it away.
Yep.
And so we did a lot of that stuff. We had our 200 litre Braumeister already at the brewery or at the homebrew store. So we used to make our own fresh wort kits as well.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that kind of, I suppose, was just, that was our way of us still being able to brew beer.
Keeping a hand in, yeah.
Yeah, because from the time that we opened the homebrew shop, it was, it was a struggle to get time to do much else, because we were so busy with doing everything, and that was kind of our outlet, so we could go, well, we're still moving towards what we want to do. We're still brewing beer.
So around this sort of time, you're running the shop, you're thinking about starting the brewery. Let me in on the inside where you blokes were sitting down having a beer and talking about what kind of brewery you wanted to operate. What were the discussions, what were the decisions you were making?
So Mark's kind of he kind of brings me back down to reality.
and he's a man of few words too, I've noticed.
He is. But it would always be that I would have a grand idea of what we needed to do, and then Mark would quickly point out how, A, we can't afford that, and B, it's never going to fit in our 112 square metre garage that we currently occupy. So, like, for us, we always wanted to open up a brewery that had a lot of different beers to try, and because we were going to be a 200 litre nano brewery, we wanted to make sure that there was always something different for people to try on a regular basis, that they weren't constantly coming in and just have seen the same beers on the board over and over again. And that's probably been one of the hardest things that we've tried to achieve, because it's so much easier when you've just got a set menu of beers and you go, well, that beer's running low, so I'm going to brew that. That beer's running low, I'm going to brew that. To keep those beers obviously new and relevant is probably one of the harder things operating a small brewery.
Yeah. Did you ever consider buying a pub and maybe retrofitting a brewery into a pub?
Yeah, I think we thought about that once or twice. But
I'm pretty sure my ideas of that were shut down.
it's not a cheap venture at all.
Yeah. The pub scene changed, I suppose, before we even were looking to open our brewery, and pubs became very popular for big chains to get involved in the liquor supply. And so So even back then, you know, it was completely unfeasible and to purchase something like that, unless you went out somewhere like out west or somewhere where you were able to be able to buy something at a reasonable price.
And so it was always going to be, you know, less like filter, more like batch in terms of your production. Was that the plan from the start?
Yeah, definitely. Like we, majority of our, I suppose, time that we spent in microbreweries in Sydney was at batch. We used to go there on a regular basis to do grain deliveries. We met a lot of the homebrewers in Sydney there probably once every couple of months with a kilo of grain on the back of my car. and we kind of picked that location because we enjoyed their space and, you know, we liked the industrial kind of feel they had and the way that they set everything up and, you know, the fact that their beers were always changing. It was kind of the same kind of thing that we were looking to achieve. And so I suppose we did take a lot from what they did and seeing that the things that we had in our head could actually work.
It's just a shame that those two owners are absolute wankers. No, they're good friends of mine.
I thought you were going to be harsh there. I thought they were
they're good friends.
They seem like pretty good blokes.
Andrew and I worked at Lion together. Ripping blokes. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, it's good that there's a bit of that all paying it forward thing in the craft beer industry. I love that where, you know, new breweries get their start based on, you know, what the scene from another one and that sort of thing. It's so cool to see, I reckon. Absolutely. Now, I want to know about this site because, as I said to you before, I don't know a lot about what you guys have been up to because I haven't been to Penrith in the past and it's really hard to find information out about you on the internet. So I went to Google Maps just to have a look at the site and see what it was. And don't take this the wrong way, but it sort of looks like a site from one of those American reality shows where they open up the storage lockers and then auction them off. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, the what's that called?
Locker storages, locker kings or something like that. Oh, something like locker wars. Storage Wars, that's the one, yeah. That was my first impression. I was like, what? That's a brewery. But now it explains that it's a small sort of 200-litre type setup. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, so to be honest, the site was kind of picked for us in that there wasn't very much industrial available at Penrith. We were looking for, I suppose, you know, something a little bit bigger, a little bit more street frontage, but it just wasn't going to become available in the price range that we were able to spend, obviously, to operate the homebrew shop out of and be able to make that kind of money. So we ended up here, and like the real estate agent showed us a lot of different places that were just, you know, would have been great for the brewery, but were unfeasable. And she showed us this. She said, "Oh, I've got an oversized garage down the back of Penrith if you're interested." And she showed it to us, and we kind of looked at it and went, oh, "Well, I suppose, yeah, we can
make this work somehow.
Yeah, we can do something with this."
So it actually was. It was actually the homebrew shop for a little while and then converted into the brewery in the same site.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Ah, right, okay. Fair enough. What other businesses are out that way and are there any other breweries?
There's one other brewery in Penrith run by Pat Casey over at Jamison Town, is it? Casey's Beer Works. He's been here for about 5 or 7 years. But then, other than that, there's us.
Yeah. And a Bunnings.
And a Bunnings. There's I suppose the next closest larger brewers to us is the Marsden. And then you don't really find another brewery until you hit Riverside at Parramatta.
Okay.
And then obviously Mountain Culture has just opened up in Katoomba and Brew Mountains, he's at
Springwood?
Near Springwood. So he's So they're kind of our closest, I suppose, brewers.
So you guys are pretty much locked down the local market in your area then?
Well, we'd like to think we're doing a good job at keeping people happy, but, you know, like we've always said, would like more breweries to, I suppose, pop up in the vicinity to kind of give people that aren't from Penrith or Western Sydney a reason to come to Western Sydney for beer.
Create your own Penrith beer triangle.
Yeah, so at the moment, you know, there's not a great deal, obviously, apart from us and Pat, there's not a great deal in Penrith to really bring the people that want to drink craft beer out here for the day. So I think we kind of miss out on a bit of that market because, you know, you've got Marrickville,
Yeah, it's a little bit too far for Dave's brewery tours to come out, isn't it?
Yeah. So we've spoken to Dave's brewery tours, and he was trying to work out a way where he could work the Marsden Park brewery into a brewery tour with our brewery, and we kind of said, like, it's, you know, it's a 40-minute drive from us. It's still, people are going to be really, really thirsty by the time they get there.
Yeah, not quite going to work. So you mentioned before that you had a 200-litre Braumeister. Is that what you're currently brewing on to fill the taps at the tasting room?
We were up until, what, January, and then we just received our new 400-litre
system. Nice.
Yeah.
And nice. So tell the beer nerds about your 400-litre system, Mark.
Oh, Matt's probably the better one to explain that system.
You are very good at handballing.
It was his favourite sport at school. So essentially, we did some work with Dave Payton from Akasha in relation to our brew house, and it's made by the same company that built their brewery. Because obviously he was happy with it, and he's we obviously respect him a lot as a brewer, and
he goes all right, I reckon.
I reckon he goes pretty good. And so when we're having a chat with him about what we wanted to do, and obviously he passed the details on to the people that we could speak to, and because he vouched for them, we went, well, you know, why wouldn't we do that? Like we went down to BrewCon last year. Down in Melbourne, and we spoke to a lot of different brewery builders down there and seen all the different stuff that they had, and went and had a look at Akasha's system, and obviously we were pretty impressed with the quality of their system as well. It was kind of a no-brainer for us to go with a company that was already vouched for in Australia. The system is a two-vessel 400-litre brew house with a 400-litre hot liquor tank attached to it as well. So we can pretty comfortably do double batches in a day on the new system, and it's a lot more enjoyable to work with than the
steam, is it?
No, it's electric still.
Electric still.
Yeah, so it does take a little bit to warm up, but the fact that we've got the hot liquor tank, which we can set at a higher temperature and mix with tap water. Yep. We get a lot more than 400 litres out of the hot liquor tank, and you heat your first batch of mash water up in your kettle. So once it's all up to temperature at the beginning of the day, you don't really have any ramp up times to wait for, apart from it coming up to the boil. And it's got two like pretty big electric elements in the kettle, so it does climb pretty quickly when you're trying to ramp up to the boil there.
Yeah, nice. And so what did you do with the 200-litre brow?
So the 200-litre brow got sold to a fella in South Australia along with our chill plate and most of our 200-litre tanks.
Yep.
He's doing the same thing that we want to do, or that we are doing down in South Australia. He's opening up a little tap room down there, and I don't think he has a name for his brewery yet. He said he's not opening it up until sometime in 2021. But he's just stockpiling some equipment and we're just glad to see it go to someone else so they can start their journey as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. So so how long have you had this new system up and running for?
So we've been brewing on it for the last, three, 4 weeks, pretty much filling out. As soon as the tank goes empty, we're pretty much brewing straight back into it.
Straight in.
Trying to catch up on empty taps because we were out of – kind of unable to produce while we were changing the systems over.
Yeah. And is it everything you dreamed it would be?
It's been good. Much better than the Braumeister. A lot a bit more fiddly with all the valves and everything, but it's good.
And because I've got a 50-litre brow myself, and what have I got? I've got the 20-litre brow. And I'm assuming it's a bit of a change of the way you brew with the brow, you do the different sparge and all that sort of stuff. So was it a real change for you guys to jump from that into a full kit?
Yes and no. So back in the garage, we built our own three vessel system.
Yeah.
So it was almost kind of good to go back to that because since we opened the homebrew store, we actually sold that off and then only had the Braumeister to brew on. So we went from a three vessel to an all in one. And now we're finally back to, you know, a multi vessel system again. So it's actually fun to use, and
it's like switching back to manual in a car, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're putting your foot down and getting going. Sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah, we've come this whole part of the interview and we haven't really spoken much about your beers. So why don't we go with those? How would you describe the portfolio of offerings of beers at the Rusty Penny?
We try and cover a fair few of the different bases. We range from having a pilsner, a couple of pale ales, a rye, a red, stout, black IPA, and then we've even got a cider on tap now. And then play around with different seasonals. So we've done a sour, we've done a brut, and trying to think of what else.
Yeah, well, we've got we've done a fair few different kinds of beers. You can, as you see on our tap in.
Yeah, untapped.
Oh, untapped.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we actually didn't even start that. One of our customers started it for us because we didn't even get around to doing it. And by the time we logged in, half of our beers were already there, which is good.
That's nice.
Yeah, so we try to do something different, and we've recently changed. We used to have, I suppose, almost 10 beers that were towards the end of last year that were constantly on tap. And I suppose that was a lot of pressure on us from our customers because everyone kind of got used to the beers that they liked, and they'd come in and they'd be like, oh, where's the rye? The rye's not there anymore. Okay, we'll put it back on tap again because you like drinking the rye and you're a good customer. And then so it got to the point where we had too many staple beers on tap. We didn't have as many beers to muck around with. So this year we've culled it back to six. So we have six staples and we've got and plus a cider, and then we've got five taps that we've always got available just to chuck something on, which we're hoping within the next, I'd say, 4 to 6 weeks, we'll have all our 12 taps full again with five new beers for people to come and try. And we've still got a 200 litre fermenter here. So we can do half batches on our on our new system and a lot of our specs.
Do something a bit crazy?
Yeah. So we've currently got a braggot sitting in the 200 litre tank.
What's a braggot?
So a braggot is a, we did a bit of reading about it, and there's some very controversial information as to where it started, who it came from, and whether it was Irish, whether it was Scottish, whether it was Welsh, and essentially it was actually suggested to us by Ben because
I was just about to say this feels like something Ben would talk about. He might have even told me about this. It's starting to sound a little bit familiar.
Yeah, so we had 40 kilos of honey from Valleywood Hops, who's a little hop grower up at Currajong, and we sell his honey here on the counter in kilo buckets, and he gave us 2 20-litre buckets of honey and said, oh, you guys can do something with this. And Mark was kind of mucking around with mead at the time. He was going to do a mead, and then it just kind of sat there, and we're all both complaining that this 2 20-kilo buckets of honey were just sitting there in the brewery causing us dramas whenever we were trying to do anything. And Ben was here one day and he said, oh, why don't you brew a braggot? And I kind of blankly stared at him as like, what the hell is a braggot? I don't know where he comes up with all this stuff.
He's got far too much time on his hand while he's driving those trucks.
Yeah, I know. He's going to have to be careful with all those new mobile hand device detection systems or whatever. You won't be able to watch so many brewing YouTube channels. But and so he suggested a braggot, and I thought, oh, I'll start looking into that. And it came across to me as a quite an interesting beer to brew, only because there wasn't that many people doing it. And we had the 40 kilos of honey, which was exactly the kind of volume of honey you needed to hit the kind of recipe, I guess. And it kind of made sense. So through Valleywood Hops. He actually grows a lot of very strange plants on up there as well, like some really crazy fruits and stuff. And one of the brewing literature that spoke about Braggart said that the Kaluna bush was what they used to traditionally.
Sounds like you made that name up.
Yeah, yeah. that was what they traditionally flavored it with instead of hops. And so I spoke to him because obviously he's a horticultural fella, and he goes, "Yeah, I can get some of that." So he actually found it for us, tracked it down, found it, and gave us a couple of kilos of the bush, which I looked for online and I couldn't find it. So we're kind of lucky to have him around.
Yeah,
and that kind of made up our mind that we kind of had to brew the Braggart, and I've got the artwork back today that's going to go in bottles.
Oh, cool!
So it's just
Have you had a little taste test yet?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange beer. It's coming out at about 10.4%, and
wow,
and I'm a little bit worried about it because I drank a sample glass of it and didn't have any cringe at all. I was just like, that just tastes like,
it was smooth.
Tastes like a 5% pale ale, and I'm like, that's
oh wow.
So we kind of decided that had to go in bottles. So we're doing it in 750ml champagne bottles.
Yep.
It will be served over the bar, but obviously in a very small sample, because it's it's obviously a high ABV beer. You know, yeah. We don't want people drinking excessive amounts of it, especially in a tap room.
Fair call. Yep. Yep.
Take it away, and it is kind of the beer, I suppose, a kind of beer you'd sit down and want to enjoy with a nice meal, rather than just sitting around in a garage in Penrith drinking it. So
yeah, in storage wars.
Yeah.
So you guys have been operating for what, 3 or 4 years now? You've just done the first of what might be a couple of upgrades, perhaps. Where is this thing heading? What are you dreaming about?
Oh well, we actually only opened our doors to the public on the 6th of December in 2018. So they've only been operating as a brewery for
14, was, yeah, the other 15? One for a while, yeah.
Yeah, like 14, 15 months.
Right.
15, yeah.
And you've already upgraded the system to double the old one.
Yeah, the system was always going to get upgraded. And if we had of, I suppose, we probably could have done it earlier, but it was just that whole process. We were still brewing so much beer to keep it on tap that we didn't have the time to invest in actually researching and building a new system.
Yeah. So in another 2 years, you'll be on a 10 hex system by my calculations. Is that right?
Yeah. That'd be pretty crazy. We kind of like the idea of staying small. We don't really have too many aspirations to be a massive production brewery. We've never really, we've been operating now. Our cans haven't made it out of Penrith. Like, we do canning with mobile canning. And so we get one of the mobile guys to come out and can our beer for us, and it hasn't left. Well, it's gone to Glenbrook, which is 15 minutes up the mountain. But so we're kind of still just servicing the local market, I guess.
That's pretty cool, though. I like that idea, and that's probably a theme that we've seen in America in recent times, where you got these uber local, breweries just servicing the local neighbourhood and people love it.
Yeah, so there was actually the name escapes me at the moment. I don't actually remember the name of the brewery in the States, but there was a small brewery. They brewed on a Blickman 3-vessel system.
It's Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, something like that.
They run out of beer every week.
Really?
Yeah, so there was – and I remember reading this is when we were kind of in our design phase – because we were speaking to a lot of brewers, and they were all saying, look, you're mad. You're mad not opening up with a 1,200-litre system as a minimum. You need the volume there. You need to be moving volumes of beer to be making it economic. And then I was obviously reading these other articles about these breweries that they brew beer every week and they keg beer every week, and the beer's on tap from Thursday night, and if they run out on Saturday night, they ring a bell and the beer's out, then they're not open on Sunday. And it kind of, I suppose, to me went, well, we can probably make a small brewery work And we've been lucky that a lot of our customers, I suppose, haven't really had a drama with the fact that we run out of beer.
Yep.
Yeah, so we do run out of beer. Like, apart from, like, we're not like every other brewery where we actually do. Like, we were closed a couple of weekends ago because we literally had, I don't know, two beers on tap. we had a really big weekend the weekend before, and people just drank us dry, essentially. And you know, I suppose it doesn't matter to us that we run out of beer, as long as everyone's having a good time and people people understand that we're a small brewery. If they come in and their pale ale's out, they find something else in the lineup that they want to drink, and they're happy with that.
Yeah, and nobody can complain that the beer's not fresh.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Absolutely. So it's just business as usual for the next 12 months to see where it goes, and maybe you might stay like this forever then.
We'll probably stay with the same concept. We are currently looking to move.
Into a bigger storage locker.
To a bigger storage locker with a bit better street frontage.
fair enough, yeah.
But essentially it'll be just uplifting what we already have and moving it to a slightly bigger space where we can fit some more people in. You know, we've got a maximum capacity here of 30 people in our tap room.
Yeah.
It doesn't take much to fill 30 people, and sometimes we have to turn people away because they turn up and we're already bursting at the seams, and we say, well, sorry guys, you can't come in. We've already gone over our capacity.
Do you do growler fills and that sort of thing as well?
Yeah, do growler fills. Yep.
So you can send them off with their growler and say, see you next weekend.
Yeah. So we do growlers and squealers.
And what about canimals?
No, we don't have the can seamer to be able to do the cannibals, unfortunately. Mm. It's one of those things that we thought about, but
we did look into. I remember we were at Modus Operandi over at Mona Vale, and we seen them using it, and we're like, that is awesome. Yeah. And it was just one of those things that we said, look, that'd be great to be able to do, but for us it was so much more practical to do growlers and squealers. Was more practical for me because it was less things that could go wrong, I guess, with a canning machine. Yep. And wasn't very practical for Mark because I went out and bought pallet loads of growlers and squealers that were unprinted. And I built a little screen printer that he could do
as you do.
That he could roll in himself and then just handed it over and said, enjoy that.
There you go, mate.
Yeah. And I think I only rolled about maybe two or three of them while I was trying to work out how it worked, and then I haven't done it since.
And Mark, do any of your customers ever comment on how amazing the screen printing is on the growlers?
Oh yeah, they love the personal touch of imperfections. Yeah, you got fingerprints and smudgings on a handful of them, so it's great.
They're unique. Yeah, well, guys, look, it sounds like you're in some ways living the dream, I'd say, out there in Penrith with your little brewery in the storage locker. I love the story, guys. It's fantastic. It's just, it's a couple of mates just having a crack and making it work in potentially an unlikely kind of venue, but I love what you're doing there. That's awesome. So maybe one day we might see some Rusty Penny cans down in a local bottle shop in Hobart, but I'm not going to hold my breath because it doesn't sound like they make it too far outside of your local environment. So,
maybe. Well, I think we'd have to go a couple of systems up before we can service all of Australia.
Maybe go and strike up a bit of an arrangement with Dave Padden to do a one-off brew. Far and wide. But, nice stuff.
I was at a car show the other day and I seen how many cans they've got there at the moment for the beers that are coming out. And I'm like, I don't think he actually has space for us.
How did Ben get his can out of there?
I didn't ask Ben how he did that.
There are allegations of some kind of favours. I don't know. They're very close, those two.
Very close.
Very close. Well, Matt and Mark, thanks for joining me tonight on the Beer Healer interview. It's been great hearing your story. I loved it. So best of luck for what's going to be a big year for you guys as you really start to ramp things up. And we'll talk again soon. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode.
If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.